Chapter 56. Harriet and the Huntress. I went to Huntley Street and rang the bell three times in quick succession, the code for all members of the Artemis Club, as it had come to be known. It was named after the Greek goddess, huntress, and protectress of women. The door was opened not by Violet, the proprietress, but by a tall, slender woman aged about 30. Her hair was long and black and hung freely, something that would have disgusted my guardian, for loose hair was indicative of loose morals, as far as he was concerned. Despite prurient speculation, though, the society was run on lines more respectable than some clubs I had heard about for so-called gentlemen. "Viola is unwell," she told me. "And you are?" "March," I said. When I first joined the club, we all used false names, a practice that began when the police took an interest in the Artemis, but they had not troubled us for years now. Some wives still stuck to their aliases, though, terrified that their husbands might find out they were relaxing and even enjoying themselves. "I am a friend of Harriet's." The lady smiled brightly. "Oh, yes, she has told us all about you, the famous lady detective. I hope you have not come to arrest us."
"The only crime that you have committed is allowing the gin to run out, Rosie."
Harriet came out of the sitting room.
"March, I thought I heard your voice."
Harriet hugged me, kissed me on both cheeks, and held me out at arm's length.
"You look lovely."
She was the only person, apart from George, who told me that.
"Amongst March's investigations," she told Rosie,
"she has come upon the elixir of youth. I swear she looks younger every time I see her.
If this carries on, March, they will be sending you back to school."
"I wish you would sell me some," Rosie said plaintively.
"Oh, you do not need it, Rosie."
Harriet put a loose tress up behind my ear.
"But I could do with a few gallons. When I see myself in the mirror these days, my face looks like a washboard."
She mimicked a scowl at our reaction.
"It is not funny. My husband sharpens his pencils on it."
Rosie chuckled. "I will restock the cabinet." Harriet and I went to the sitting room. It had seemed quite glamorous when I first arrived in London, but the chintz sofa was getting threadbare on the arms, and the cushions were splitting now.
"I hear that Vi has been dipping into our funds," Harriet whispered. "Apparently the accounts made no sense at all at the AGM, and she has absconded with this year's membership fees."
"Then I am glad I have not paid mine yet," I said.
"Do not tell Rosie, but Vi was so busy fiddling the books she did not notice that I have not coughed up for the last 3 years."
Harriet sat close to me.
"It is difficult enough getting money for train fares when Mr. F. makes me keep household accounts and goes through them every month."
I did not ask Harriet how life with her husband was, for I knew that he was hardly aware of her existence. Rosie returned with a fresh bottle of Bombay, put it on the table in front of us with two glasses, and left us alone. Harriet poured.
"You are distracted," she observed as we clinked glasses.
"I am sorry." I brought out my old cigarette case, and we lit two Turkish. Harriet put on a white glove to protect her hand from staining, but I never bothered.
"When most girls are distracted, it is love. I assume you are still estranged from your gorgeous policeman."
Harriet puckered her lips to puff out a train of miniature clouds.
"Well,"
I began cagily, and Harriet sat up.
"Oh, March," she grabbed my arm. "He has not. You have not." "He has," I laughed, "and I have accepted. Oh, March!"
Harriet flung her arms round me.
"Oh, March!"
She burst into tears.
"But that is wonderful. When? How? Why? Well, I know why. But what made him change his mind? What did your guardian say? I bet he was livid."
"I have not told him yet." I pulled back to look my friend in the eye.
"And this is our secret until then."
Harriet blew her nose and dabbed her cheeks and kissed me.
"Is that why you are perturbed?"
I shook my head,
and we drank for a while without speaking. Harriet was one of the few people I have ever met who knew how to use silence to draw me out. "I am worried about a case," I admitted at last. Harriet put her glass down and topped mine up. "A murder?" No matter how she tried, Harriet lit up in anticipation of some gruesome details. "He has not killed anyone directly yet," I inhaled nervily, "but it may only be a matter of time. A man is attacking women, forcing himself upon them and beating them brutally." It sounded very clinical when I put it into words. "We think we know who he is, but we have no proof. His victims never see him clearly enough to identify him." "What did you mean by directly?" Harriet took up her glass again. I sometimes wondered why she ever put it down. "One that we know of was driven to suicide, and she was only 17. "Have you no clues?" Harriet asked. "Not even part of an insect?" I had told her once how the leg of a woodlouse had helped to solve a murder in Highgate. "Mr. Gryce has 2 lead balls that he wants to prove came from the same gun." I smiled wryly. "He got the first from a man's head, and the second by shooting my handbag. It passed straight through my cigarette case and hip flask." "I noticed that you had a different case." Harriet clutched her own bag protectively. "But how can they help him?" I took a swig of gin. "The rifling and scratches in a barrel marks bullets when they are fired," I explained, "and he believes that the marks for every gun are unique. But the balls are too flattened to be able to match them." "A pity they are not footballs," Harriet remarked. "Then he could pump them up, like I have to do for the boys. Their father is much too busy for such a mundane task. Cricket may be his second religion, but when his sons want to play, yours truly is the one who gets roped in to keep wicket." She pulled a face. "And I am absolutely hopeless at it. I am just thinking what I wouldn't do for a smoke when a lump of leather comes smashing into my head. It's a blessing I have not lost any teeth. Yet." I laughed. "Oh, Harriet, I wish you could be here all the time." "So do I, March. But we must think of a plan." "We?" Harriet pulled at her fingers one at a time quite hard, as she did sometimes when she was concentrating. "If you cannot find any clues, then we must find a way to trap him," she decided at last. "We?" I stubbed out my cigarette in a blue glass ashtray, though I had not finished it. "We caught your father's murderer," Harriet remarked, though I needed no reminding of that night. She dabbed her cigarette out and her shadow on the wall swayed. "And we made good partners in Scarfield Manor," I reminisced with a shudder. "But I tried entrapment with one of the victim's brothers in an opium den." "Opium?" For once I thought I might have shocked my friend, but Harriet's expression was dreamy. "I have not had that since I sneaked out of a Mothers for the Empire meeting in Hull." She poured us both another gin. "What happened?" "The police did not like our methods, and now her brother is missing." "Killed?" There was no twinkle in Harriet's eye now. "We do not know, but I fear so." Harriet paused. "We shall have to think about this very carefully." "If we were to set another trap," I said cautiously, "the man who commits these crimes always chooses a young, pretty woman." I paused. "And neither of us fits into both those categories." My friend pouted, but knew better than to protest. She would have fitted the bill once, but I never could. "Come upstairs." Harriet jumped up so suddenly that I clunked the glass into my teeth. "It is about time that you met some of the other members."